Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to speak and the moderators for asking me to speak. I have no disclosures other than my voice is a little shaky, so hopefully it will give out, won't give out in the middle. So objectives for the session, I'll review several pediatric intestinal emergencies related to the colon. Certainly not a exhaustive list, but will include Hirschsprung-related enterocolitis, colitis mostly related to inflammatory bowel disease, and typhlitis. In alignment with the session objectives, I plan to discuss the diagnoses, the presentation, how to initially manage these patients, and at what time the option to transfer may come up, and when operative intervention may be needed to temporize the patient before transfer. As other speakers may highlight today, several general themes I think will be repeated in regard to managing pediatric patients and that may eventually need transfer. Certainly communication between surgeons is important and should happen early and often. It's probably helpful to discuss the goals of patient's care and the potential windows for opportunities to transfer if needed, and then to discuss potential temporizing measures if the patient's not able to transfer, what you can do to temporize the patient. And then the child may not always need definitive therapy prior to coming to or being transferred to a tertiary facility. So as before, I'm gonna go with a case-based format to illustrate these three areas. So the first case is a three-month-old former full-term infant who has experienced 48 hours of non-bilious vomiting, intermittent explosive stools, intermittent fevers, and abdominal distension. The mother comments that the constipation's been worsening over the last several weeks and the child's become acutely ill over the last 48 hours. On exam, the child's febrile, tachycardic, dehydrated appearing with a distended tympanic abdomen. The white count is 19,000, and on plain films, the x-rays show the significantly dilated loops of bowel with air fluid levels on the decubitus, but there's no free air and no pneumatosis. So you'll have to let me fast forward a bit as this certainly could present with a broad differential diagnosis, but I'm going to stress the worsening constipation, fever, distension, and explosive stools, and the x-rays suggesting a distal obstruction. So although without confirming the pathology for this child, this would be certainly suspicious for Hirschsprung-related enterocolitis or Hirschsprung-associated enterocolitis based on history, physical exam, and initial radiographs. This is the most common cause of death in children with Hirschsprung's disease, and it may present prior to or after definitive surgery. So there's a wide range in the literature between single digits and 25% of cases presenting with Hirschsprung-associated enterocolitis without a diagnosis yet, and this may occur in 5 to 40% of postoperative patients. So certainly treatment would involve resuscitation and decompression of the GI tract from above and below and administration of antibiotics. So decompression of the GI tract, certainly with a nasogastric tube from above if the child's vomiting, and then to decompress the lower GI tract, we utilize a soft red rubber catheter and decompress the child. With that, I'd warn you, as the initial rectal exam and putting in the catheter initially, you may want to stand out of the way because it can be quite impressive. So decompression by placing the catheter in the rectum, and the concept of this is you're getting above the functional obstruction where there's aganglionosis of the colon, you're getting into the ganglionated portion of the bowel and decompressing that child with decompressions, and then you can also irrigate the child with 10 to 20 mLs per kilogram of normal saline to wash out the colon. So this is the same child's x-ray 24 hours later after several decompressions and irrigations. And if this allows improvement in the child's condition, this is certainly a perfect window to transfer the patient. You've stabilized the child, you've resuscitated them, and you've decompressed their GI tract. If you cannot definitively manage the child at your institution, this would be a great time to call. So certainly completion of the workup can be done at your facility or at transfer facility, but would involve a barium enema, which here you see the area of the transition zone and the proximal dilation of the colon. So this is an example of the pathology of a resected Hirschsprung's case. So you can see the markedly diminutive distal bowel that is aganglionic and the transition zone and then the dilated proximal bowel. So if the child does not respond to decompression and irrigations, then you're not able to decompress the child, then operative management is recommended. And this would be performing a colostomy and mucous fistula, and this can be based on the visual transition zone that you see in the operating room, or it can be based on pathology if you have that available at your institution. But that may be a temporizing measure for the patient as well. So case number two is a 12-year-old male who presents to the GI service with fever, lethargy, tachycardia, abdominal distension, and bloody stools for the last 72 hours. He has an elevated white count, an elevated ESR, and was recently diagnosed with ulcerative colitis 3 months ago. The GI service calls you after he hasn't improved on antibiotics after 24 hours of admission, and he's been transfused for a hemoglobin of 6.5 after having significant bloody stools. And his x-rays on admission show a markedly dilated ascending, transverse, and descending colon. And at the time of the consult, they've also gotten cross-sectional imaging. And here's some representative cuts of what you may see in this condition. You can see a markedly thickened and hyperemic colon from the ascending, transverse, and descending colon. So this likely represents severe colitis and may be a presentation of toxic megacolon. And there are specific definitions in the literature that are worth reviewing. They may not be as practical as you manage these patients, but severe colitis is defined as 6 or more bloody stools per day, plus one sign of systemic toxicity, which may include anemia, tachycardia, elevated ESR rate, fever. And then toxic megacolon is formally defined as total or segmental non-obstructive dilation greater than 5.5 centimeters on your cross-sectional imaging. So that may help you manage. But common etiology of this are inflammatory bowel disease, including ulcerative colitis and Crohn's, infectious colitis, which may include C. diff colitis, Salmonella, Shigella, and others, and ischemic colitis. And the incidence of toxic colitis, actually in inflammatory bowel disease, is about 5 to 10%. So we're going to assume, based on our case, that the child had ulcerative colitis and toxic severe colitis related to that. So your initial medical therapy will be resuscitation, transfusion if needed, electrolyte repletion, and assessment of nutrition, and then ruling out other causes of infectious colitis. Corticosteroids are the mainstay of therapy for this, and there have also been other smaller trials with infliximab and cyclosporin in those kids that are refractory to steroids, which is actually higher in the pediatric population than it is adults. I think in adults it's about 30%, and in kids it's upward of 40 or 50%. There have been no actual studies that have been definitive on using antibiotics in severe colitis, although these are routinely going to be utilized until you rule out other causes for infectious colitis. And actually, the way these kids present is quite ill, so these will be initiated and can be peeled back if needed. So surgical management, really hard indications that would apply to any surgical patient: perforation, hemorrhage that is not controlled, sepsis, and failure to improve with medical therapy being corticosteroids or other therapies. And then due to their overall critical illness, a subtotal colectomy with endoleostomy and a Hartmann's is likely your safest procedure, allowing them time to regain their general health, nutrition, and then contemplate for future surgical options. And sometimes the pathology is actually helpful, as you may think you're dealing with ulcerative colitis and it may be Crohn's colitis in about 5 to 10% of patients, and that'll affect your future operative management. So certainly stabilization with steroids, if they stabilize in that setting, would be in a window to transfer. and otherwise they may need temporizing measures before you transfer. So the final case may be a little less common, but we have seen this at our centers. 8-year-old with male undergoing induction chemotherapy for acute lymphocytic leukemia, and the surgery service is called to see him for persistent fever, abdominal distension, diarrhea, and vomiting. And his labs show an absolute neutrophil count of 0.5 and pancytopenia, so great operative candidate here. So your presentation x-rays are relatively nonspecific, so the HemOnc service has actually obtained cross-sectional imaging prior to the consult, as he hasn't improved in 12 hours. And here you can see this thickening of the colon. Often it involves the terminal ileum and sometimes even into the small bowel. You can see pneumatosis, you can see significant inflammation, and here you see maybe a few dots of extraluminal air. So this would be consistent with tympholitis based on the history, the fact that they're undergoing chemotherapy for most likely leukemia is the most common. And so this is also neutropenic colitis, and this is an inflammatory condition of the small bowel and cecum. That the mechanism's basically a combination of immunosuppression, mucosal injury, and bacterial invasion that leads to edema, inflammation, and can progress to perforation and even tissue necrosis. So in the literature, Dr. Schamberg has actually written a nice paper from some time ago, but really the tenets have not really changed over that time frame. So again, surgical indications would be hard indications that most of us would operate on, persistent GI bleeding after the resolution of their pancytopenia and correction of their coagulopathy, free air, or clinical deterioration consistent with uncontrolled sepsis. So it's most common in leukemia. The most complicated cases are AML, and this can occur in this setting 8 to 10% of patients. And the presenting symptoms are relatively nonspecific. Fever, abdominal pain, and diarrhea are the most common. So medical therapy, obviously bowel rest, parenteral nutrition, and antibiotics would be the mainstay of therapy. And if this is not improve, or if they're hard indications for surgical therapy, just realize this carries a high morbidity and mortality. Most likely, you're going to explore and perform an ostomy, and depending on the clinical situation. But these kids are often very sick and are immunosuppressed and don't heal very well. So in summary, I've reviewed certainly not an exhaustive list, but pediatric surgical emergencies that involve the colon, Hirschsprung's disease with enteric colitis, severe colitis mainly related to inflammatory bowel disease, but it can be infectious as well, and tympholitis. And often these kids can be stabilized with initial resuscitation and medical therapy. So the windows for transfer need careful selection, and they may often occur after initial temporizing surgery is performed, and certainly upfront communication is critical. Thank you, and we'll take questions at the end.